I'm going to turn it over to Bob Sluga, who I will introduce now. So Bob directs Arusha International's Global Marine Conservation Program. He is a researcher who focuses on biodiversity, marine protected areas, and fisheries, but especially marine plastic pollution of allergies. Now.
Thank you, Dorothy.
Yeah, I'll get out of your way.
Well, thank you for coming. The last spot here, so hopefully make it worth your while. I want to start just with a story from this past week. You're probably familiar that last week was Shark Week, so I don't know if you watched that or followed that at all. But just to tell you something about our family, last week we had a friend visiting from Britain. We lived in the UK for 11 years and just moved back to Florida recently. And we wanted to take them snorkeling and hopefully to see some interesting things. And so we were snorkeling just off there at the coast of Florida. And we had been to a spot there before and saw some small little sharks. And so we were hoping to see those. And indeed, we did see several small nurse sharks, which was exciting, and a turtle swimming in the water, and lobsters. And then at one point, my daughter raises her head up out of the water and says, "Big shark." And she points in a particular direction. So our whole family swims in that direction towards the big shark. We didn't see it, unfortunately. It was more afraid of us, but it wasn't a big nurse shark. But if you're like me or our family and you love creation, if you love seeing those kinds of beautiful animals, I think in many ways, creation care makes a lot of sense. So I want to talk, this is the title of the talk, and it's actually rather than an ocean of plastic, I want to talk to you about an ocean of hope, and hope through Christ, and hope through science, and what we can do to care for our world. But a lot of it starts really with a vision of what the future is, and this is in La Paz, Mexico, in a project Arash is working in collaboration with TEAM and Wheaton College to care for an area of real natural beauty. And so you see, this is me sort of there in the background with a big whale shark. And when you have these types of experiences, again, it's maybe very easy to see why we want to care for the ocean. But as many people have pointed out, God didn't have to create these beautiful creatures or these sea lions, which are so amazing to swim with. This is a picture of my son. Arusha has a center in Kenya. And you can see, I think, at least I can see in his face, the joy of finding this brittle star there that he's able to hold in his hand. And he's learned to really love the world around him through these kinds of experiences. It's not just these big things like whale sharks and sea lions. It's these small things as well. This is a coral. And probably you can see just hiding inside the arms of this little tiny porcelain crab that's really quite amazing. And Genesis 1 sets out a vision for the ocean. It says, "And God said, let the waters teem with living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the vault of the sky. So God created the great creatures of the sea, and every living thing with which the water teems that moves about in it, according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. God blessed them and said, be fruitful, increase in number, fill the waters and the seas, and let the birds increase in the earth." And we see, as Dorothy's pointed out, that what we've been doing is actually reducing this abundance. So God set out a vision for us of the ocean that's based upon abundance, on diversity. And he noticed here that God called it good before humans were around. So whatever your timeline is on that, God declared it good without reference to us. And so as we try to image God, part of what we're doing is relating to that goodness and declaring that intrinsic value of creation. And so we care for it because God cared for it and loved it. And in fact, actually, it's not just Genesis 1. Those of you who followed much of the creation care literature throughout the entire scripture, one of the things that was astounding to me, I came from more of a traditional missions background, even though I have a doctorate in marine biology, And Revelation 5:9 is the great vision of the throne room of God, all nations, tribes, and tongues before the throne of God. But if you go on and just read a few verses further, which I never did, you get to verse 13, Revelation 5. Then I heard every creature in heaven and on earth and under the earth and on the sea and all that is in them saying, to him who sits on the throne and to the Lamb be praise and honor and glory and power forever and ever. So the vision that we have as Christians is not just God's declaration of its being good, us given the mandate to care for it, but we see actually in the new creation, all creation worshiping God. And yet, creation groans. This is an article that was recently in Christianity Today that Arasha participated a lot in. I'm not going to focus on that. I think we all understand that. But in the Shark Week theme, you may or may not know that every year we kill 100 million sharks, mostly for their fins, often as bycatch. So creation is groaning. And you see that very dramatically with plastic pollution. And again, I'm not going to try to overwhelm you with images of all the rubbish that is around the world. I don't think we need to be convinced of that. But history of plastic actually starts relatively recently. It's only been in the last 60 years that plastic was invented, even. And we see, though, that over time, and this is just really the last, 30 years or so, our dependence upon those kind of plastics has increased over time. And so we use, 2015, 36.5 million per capita consumption. Oh, this is the number, amount of bottled water that each person in America consumes each year. And so we're increasingly using bottled water and these single-use plastics. And this is an example here of how long it takes for a plastic bottle to degrade out in the environment. 450 years for your average plastic bottle to degrade. And the problem, of course, is that it doesn't degrade into nothing. It degrades into microplastics, and we'll get into that in a moment. There's been a lot of social media recently. Some of the more creative, maybe you've seen the sort of the stop sucking campaign. This is me kind of pouting on my home beach in Florida. And you don't have to walk in these beaches for more than a couple minutes till you find a straw. So there's some real efforts recently, some less successful. Starbucks, to the great applause, said, let's get rid of plastic straws. Then they started selling paper straws wrapped in plastic. So I just didn't get it. There's an ad campaign called Hold On To Your Butt. I won't show you the pictures. But basically, they bought cigarette butts. And actually, in the cigarette butts, there's plastic in that as well. And the recent International Coastal Cleanup Report lists cigarette butts as the most found pollution on beaches in 2017 in their cleanups. There is hope. Again, as I said, I lived in the UK the last 7 years, and we've been talking about these things for many years, but a number of different things occurred to really make a change in the society as a whole. One of these was the One Less campaign. So you can see this is the same One Less bottle, a little more used, that was given out by a campaign in London to develop essentially drinking fountains in London. If you've ever traveled in Europe and looked for a drinking fountain, it's very difficult. And so people are starting to realize we need to get rid of or provide ways for people to fill up bottles in public areas. And I think here in the US we have that, but often people don't trust the water. So we need to think of a way to get people to really trust that water and test it. There's also, in England, they've made it just a small charge for a plastic bag in a grocery store, so 5p. But that actually decreased plastic bag use by 80%. And then very recently, there was a series, the Blue Planet 2 series, that David Attenborough, one of the most respected people in the country, there's this great series, and kind of like I tried to do at the beginning, these beautiful shots of all these animals, and over weeks and weeks, everyone was amazed by the ocean and the world around it. And then the last episode was on plastic, and people were just horrified. And so there was such an upwelling of emotion and a sea change that people said, we have got to change our society. We have got to change the way things are packaged. And so I think in Europe, there's quite a movement towards really reshaping society in a way that is reducing our dependence upon plastic. And it can happen here as well. Even in Florida, I like to shop at Aldi because it's less complicated. There's less stuff to choose from and you don't have as much plastic. But you see, you know, Americans, and they're not just foreign people, you know, walking out of Aldi without plastic bags. And so it is possible to shop here and to have a whole grocery store that doesn't give out plastic bags. So change is possible. And I think that as we reflect on this as Christians, I've given some of the ideas on creation care, and I don't want to spend a long time on this, and Dorothy, I think, did a great job of looking at the issue of justice. But plastic pollution is, at the very least, related to our love of God and love of neighbor. I talked about God's declaration of the goodness of creation. And so if we are to love God, we need to obey his commands to take care of it, and we need to do the things after his own heart. And our use of plastic impacts other people. And so it is an issue of justice. It's an issue of food security. A couple years ago, I was involved in a short-term mission trip to the Bahamas, and I convinced our church to make part of that a beach cleanup. And in seeing what we saw, but also talking to Bahamians, what you see is that a lot of the plastic washing up on especially the southern islands in the Bahamas are these small little water bags that are used for development in Haiti. So in Haiti, people are trying to do something really good, giving out water, clean drinking water, but they're in these plastic bags, and people just use them and throw them, ends up in the ocean, and it washes over to the Bahamas and pollutes those beaches. So it's really not loving. It's not loving Haitians, not loving their Bahamian neighbors. And so we need to think of some really more creative ways to solve these problems of water quality, of justice, food security, but to do it in a way that is not resulting in plastic pollution. So there's a lot more further theological work that we're doing. Arasha has a model of using science and theology to drive our conservation. So there's some really interesting work that we're going to be trying to do over the next few years, particularly thinking about plastic as a disruptor of relationships. Thinking of Michael Northcott's work. If you don't know Professor Northcott from Edinburgh University, I would encourage you to discover his writing. We're going to look at Pope Francis's Laudato Si and thinking through the lens of poverty and justice. And also looking at plastic pollution really through the lens of the wisdom literature, and as a result of the pursuit of wealth and knowledge rather than righteousness and wisdom, as we're exhorted in the Proverbs Ecclesiastes. So I want to move on then, and I want to pass around some things. So if you can, maybe you can just help. There are three bottles here. The plastic bottle, ironically, is full of nurdles. And so I want to tell you a little bit about those. And the rest is some microplastic and plastic pollution and some mixed in with sand, just so you can kind of have a tangible, if you haven't been on a beach or haven't seen these things, look at a little bit of what it's about. And just want to say as well, you may not live near the coast, so I'm talking about the ocean, but this is an issue in rivers and an issue in lakes. This is the watershed of the Mississippi River system, and you can see the huge area that filters into the ocean. So those individual rivers and lakes are affected, but also that ultimately gets into the ocean. Microplastics are small plastic pieces, less than 5 millimeters in size, and they're divided into two main categories, primary microplastics and secondary microplastics. So primary is these nurdles in this plastic container there, or microfibers. Those are things that we've made to be that small. So for example, these plastic pellets, that's what everything plastic is made of. So this computer or anything plastic you have started as these small pellets, and it was melted down in toothpaste and things, the little micro beads. We've made those plastics to be that size, and so there's an intentionality to it. Secondary microplastics are broken down from other sources. So a plastic bag that breaks down into small pieces, or a fishing rope that the fibers go out. And so in terms of microplastics, these fall into five different categories. So fragments, so these again are things that are broken down from other pieces. Micro pellets, that's the nurdles, the little pellets that you have there. Fibers, so these are uniform sort of plastic strands, often in polyester. If you wash that, that's made with fibers and they go out. Films and foam, so think of styrofoam, so different kinds of microplastics. And we're going to focus just for a moment on these pellets. They're also known as nurdles or mermaid's tears. And these are pre-production class plastic. So they're shipped around the world. Here's a little more of a close-up of it. And they're melted to make plastic objects. They're less than 5 millimeters in size and therefore classified as a microplastic. And they get into the ocean. You know, they're shipped around the world, so a container falls off a ship and opens up. And sometimes you get huge numbers washing up on beaches. But almost all beaches in the world, if you look around for these, you'll find them. Also, when they're brought into factories in the process of moving around, they get spilled and then they get into the system through the drains, and they're not caught by our sewage systems. So a lot of the problem is, you know, we can't catch these tiny little particles of plastic, and so they go right through our the sewage system and the treatment plants, and so they get out into the rivers and then out into the oceans. They're highly interactive with the environment. Here's a jar of them that we collected on a beach in the UK. And you don't have to focus on all the detail here, but this is the level of persistent organic pollutants that have been found on the surfaces of these plastic pellets collected from around the world. You know, and so you can see, and that's one of 9 different types of pollution that they're monitoring on these plastic particles of pellets that are found in beaches, you can see all over the world. So these pellets are acting as little sponges for many different types of toxins. And the size of it makes it really difficult to have a potential strategy for trying to remove these pellets from beaches. So once they're out there, you can't get them off the beaches. But one of the things that we've been involved in, here's just actually from this area, so you can see too, even in some of the lakes in Lake Michigan, that there's these types of pesticides or pollutants on the surface of these nurdles. So this, to my left, is the daughter that raised her head and was trying to chase after the shark, and one of our interns, based in Cornwall, now doing a new PhD on seabird ecology in Portugal. But we were able to do a project looking at nurdle distribution in Cornwall, which is kind of the southwest west coast of the UK. And so this was just for her student project. So just to say, this is a high school student. She had a little help from me, but part of her work study, she was able to actually do scientific surveys of these nurdles on beaches in Cornwall to, you know, present for her project, you know, a scientific sort of assessment of these nurdles and numbers of found. But the exciting thing is that then this data is actually uploaded onto a website called the Great Nurdle Hunter. And so, you know, you can map the distribution of nurdles around the world, and this is a citizen science project. So one of my take-home messages for you is anybody can get involved in this. And I'll tell you later about a tool and resources for helping you to do that. But through this website, going out, counting these nurdles on beaches, your class, your Sunday school, we're encouraging churches to get involved with this, is you contribute to our understanding of the distribution of these nurdles globally. And it's helping scientists to understand broad global patterns. So yeah, again, you can see this is actually her observation. I was with her at this time, and we collected, our marine team collected 84 nurdles, 3 people hunting. So there's this information now that's out there. And so if you want to do this type of work, it's extremely helpful. This was a beach, Rocha started in Portugal, and we had just had a recent leadership meetings there. And so one of our, it was World Environment Day for one of our activities. And so we had everyone out on the beach and collecting nurdles. And so we were able to again, as part of our team meetings, in an afternoon, collect some, 4 different samples from a beach that had never been sampled before in the world, and contribute that to the global database. And just to say that in Florida, where we're now living, just off from the Cape Canaveral Space Center, beginning to do this type of research. So looking forward to introducing you maybe one day to these beaches in Florida as we develop a center where we can host interns and host people to come and see and be involved in this type of work. As a result of our studies and our research on microplastics, we've developed something called a microplastic toolbox. So I want to suggest to you is that if microplastics are something you'd like to get involved in, the literature is immense. It's growing every day. It's relatively recent. What we've tried to do is make it possible for you to get involved in this type of work. We have a field study center in France. And so we had an exploratory trip to the Mediterranean, as one does. And we were looking at how can we look at the science to see, what is happening in this area, and theologically, what are some of the issues, and use that to try to drive our research, our education, advocacy, and conservation. And so we'd find on these beaches is this type of microplastics. And so this was sort of our research team. A real hallmark of Arasha, and many of you who are working in universities, is the discipleship of young scientists. And this is a great way to be able to work with young scientists. And so we've tried to implement this type of model where we have a site-based conservation, and we're looking at the science, doing original research and biodiversity conservation, or in this case, microplastics research, but then also in a parallel track, trying to say, what does the scripture say about that? And then let that drive the work that we do. And we sampled an area in this area of the Camargue region of France, if you know that area, and developed a citizen science protocol, again, that you can use to be able to sample microplastics. And so it involves sieving a lot of sand and going back into the laboratory and counting and collecting and characterizing these microplastics. And so this has a pointer, but you can see up on the left where it says Parc Regional National or Naturel Regional de Camargue. That was our study area of this southern part of France. And it's very simple kind of information, but it's information that doesn't exist for most places in the world. And so you can see on the left, we divided these things into the various types of microplastics, and we had different sites. And not surprisingly, this Cabau had an average microplastic density way higher than others because it was an industrial area. So we can show the impact of a more industrial to a more natural kind of area based upon these type of sampling procedures. And so this is part of our microplastics toolbox. We've developed guidelines for sampling microplastics on sandy beaches that conforms to scientific standards, that the data can actually be used by other scientists. And so this is something that's freely available on the Arasha website. Let's see if I have the of on our website that you can download. Part of this is theological reflection. So one of our team leaders over there on the left, spending time together studying the Bible, and actually even on this toolbox as well, is one of the first, if not the first, Bible study on plastic pollution. And so what does the scripture say about it as a first attempt to reflect on it? And we had a whole volunteer week where we brought people together, we used citizen science methods, did beach cleanups, interacted with people on the beach, studied the Bible, lived and ate together, watched plastic oceans. And a result of that is then this, you can see the website up here, and this is all information that if you wanted to start a microplastics project, you have a student maybe, or you're in an area, this will give you all the information you need to get going. There's information on the science, so how to do these nurdle hunts, how to do a more sophisticated microplastic research, the Bible studies, some tips on lifestyle, links to videos and websites. So I'd encourage you to, if you're interested in this, to go to this site, and this will give you or your students the ability to get started. You know, it's going to get you going in the right path, and there's even PowerPoints. If you're giving a presentation, you can take the PowerPoint and use it. So what I want to conclude is we think that plastic pollution is a major problem. There is an ocean of plastic. How can we bring hope to the ocean? I think it's a holistic manner. It involves doing research. It involves education. It involves some radical lifestyle changes. It involves going out for beach cleanups. We're really encouraging you. September 15th is International Coastal Cleanup. If you're near the coast, or even if you're on a river, as I showed, that ends up in the sea. Get involved. There's lots of opportunities. You don't have to organize it yourself. But if you'd like to, as part of our toolbox, we actually have a beach cleanup guide, so how you can actually organize your own beach cleanup. So we're encouraging Christians to actively participate in this. We think that through theological reflection, helping us to better understand God's heart and what it means that there's this thing that we've created called plastic that's being used and having all these different problems. And this is a global activity. So this is just Arusha countries who have committed to being a part of the beach cleanups this coming September. So you can see even in Singapore, the little dot there. So we'd love for you to be a part of this this activity. God's hope for the ocean is one of abundance and is of joy and of peace. And so I think we do need to make some relatively small changes, you know, bringing your own your coffee cup, getting rid of single-use plastic, you know, stop sucking. But those changes, to be honest, that's just the beginning. We've developed a society and a lifestyle that is based upon our convenience and our time and consumption, and we're really going to have to dig deep and make some significant changes. Because what we really want to see is God's oceans flourishing, God's people flourishing. And so many of you know Arusha doesn't just do marine stuff. In fact, we're mostly known for other things. But just to say that if you go to our website, we're working in places like Uganda. We're doing community gardens in Vancouver. And we have projects globally that you could get involved in or your students can get involved in. This is my family, so just saying thank you for letting me come speak to you. Looking forward to getting back to them and to the warm beaches tomorrow. So here's more information on our website, and with that, I'll end.
Thank you so much. Our session is coming to an end. However, the next thing on tap is a little break before lunch. So, if you're willing, we could entertain some questions. So let's entertain them on Bob, and then if you have any for me, I can.
didn't tell me anything I didn't already know, and I don't see any hope.
Well, I think the hope is in Revelation 5:13. I think the hope is that we've seen places where actually we can make a difference. I would use the example of Europe as an example of hope, that actually a society that was moving in a particular direction has taken a radical course shift. And I think we have to root our hope as that Christ cares for our world around us more than we do. And so even in the midst, there's always, I guess I think in one way is remnant theology to me kind of plays a role in this. There's always a remnant. There's always something that God saves. And we see that throughout the biblical tradition. And so we're seeing more and more people be concerned about this problem. I was just speaking last night at a local church that it's not plastic issue, but it's put solar panels on the roof as a result of this. So I think things are going to get worse before they get better. But we have solutions, we have tools, and so it's really a matter of pushing the Christian church, particularly here in North America, over that edge that has happened in other places. Kenya, the rest of the world is leading. Kenya has outlawed plastic bags. Rwanda has outlawed plastic bags. So I think this is an area where the U.S. and probably, I don't know the Canadian situation as well, is really, really behind. And so maybe the hope is that the other world, rest of the world, is actually making some significant changes, and that eventually we will catch up.
Can I add to one thing? I'm always looking for the hope. And I'm always trying to give it to my students, right? And so now I tell this story about, if you Google something like the biggest beach cleanup in the world, it's in India, where in a 2-year period, this entire beach in Mumbai that was full of trash to 5 feet was cleaned up. And it started with one guy. He was a lawyer, and he saw the trash, and he started picking it up by hand himself. And then somebody came. And then he said, this isn't gonna work, and he knocked on all these doors. By the end, they had thousands of people. They had trucks. And they picked up millions. And now the beach is clean. And now they've got all these people go out. Now, of course, they have a lot of people, right? But he had to convince them that it was worth it. And of course, India is different than here. So they didn't have rubber gloves and stuff. They're all like out in the desert, wading in trash. But it's a super cool story about
macroplastics on mammals and so on, but could you tell us the effects of microplastics, the one you described here, in smaller sizes? What life forms do they impact most? Are we talking about film feeders?
That's really a burgeoning area of research, but there's been significant findings where they've gone to fish markets, even, for example, in San Francisco, and looked certainly in the guts of animals, but even starting to be in the flesh of fish found at fish markets, of course, mussels. Again, a recent study, I can't pull it out of my head, but almost 100% of the samples of mussels that they looked at had plastic, especially microfiber pollution in them. Last week, I was just at a conference in Trinidad for the Society for Conservation Biology, and someone had done a study of sponges off the coast of Grenada, and every sponge sample had microfibers in it. So filter feeders, particularly, of course, seabirds, we know have, you know, stomachs full of that. They're even finding things like copepods and krill, you know, in the Arctic and Antarctic. So, and then that's sort of moving up the food chain to the things that eat them. There still isn't, we know that the microplastics are sucking in the toxins. We know that the smaller animals are eating them and the bigger animals are eating them, and we're eating them. And so there's obviously a smoking gun somewhere, but you can't, there's no, that I'm aware of, any study definitively linking that to human health and well-being. But that's really where the research is trying to go, is what is the impact of this on our health and the health of the ecosystems as well.
Just following up on what Ruth said, and I don't want to get myself in particular in trouble here, speaking as a Canadian and all those kind of looking in from the outside on this issue, and considering the whole theological spectrum behind it, and the whole question of hope. Do you see any hope in altering, so here we go, altering the evangelical mindset to get, I guess, to put it one way, more on board on this issue? It seems to me politically, if that doesn't happen, then I would have to agree with Ruth that it'll be tough finding
a hope. Yeah, I'm going to hit that for a couple of directions. One is my experience growing up in an evangelical church that didn't believe in social action. You know, the gospel was words and not deed. And we've seen a sea shift in that whole movement within the evangelical church because of, I think they've actually started reading the Bible better, but also because of groups like the Lausanne movement, which is another angle. If you don't know the Lausanne movement, it's a body of sort of like an umbrella organization of evangelical groups. So it's not about creation care in particular, it's everything. So Billy Graham and John Stott started that organization. And my understanding of it is at the time in the 1970s when it started, Billy Graham said, the gospel is only about evangelism. And John Stott won the day in the argument that actually began to include social justice and social issues as part of the gospel, still very anthropocentric. In my opinion, I've lived abroad 21 years, so I've kind of come in as a bit of an outsider to the U.S. as well. And that Billy Graham's sway in the U.S. as much good as he did, his sway in this area has really been kind of negative. Because of that lightning or laser-like focus just on the word and evangelism. But the church has changed for the most part. You see now mission trips and you see people talking about and working in inner cities. And the 2010 Cape Town meeting of Lausanne came out with a clear statement, creation care is a gospel issue under the lordship of Jesus Christ. And there was a Cape Town commitment by this body to creation care. And there was some significant pushback. There's a book up there on the shelf that is sort of an outcome of that and subsequent meetings where looking at the theology, the practice, and examples of creation care globally. There just has been a whole series of meetings in almost every region of the world with affecting 100 different countries of leaders of Christian churches coming together to look at creation care as a gospel issue. So I do think that my opinion is that we're on the forefront, that the wave is, groups have been pushing this creation care, and we're not yet to a tipping point. But I do believe in my lifetime that we'll see a tipping point. And my kids, if they're standing up here, will be like, can you believe it that in the 2000, early 2000, those guys thought that creation care wasn't a part of, what were they thinking, So that gives me hope, and I see evidence of that. We're still pushing, and sorry, one last anecdote. I'm from Detroit, so in quite a red group of churches, and when I give talks like this, it's not politically it's not seen through a lens of politics. You look at kids and there's plastic, and it's like, okay, we're not talking politics here. We're talking people's lives. They may not really get why it matters for copepods, but you know, this is an issue that we doesn't have to have political connotations, at least in understanding the problems. Solutions probably do, but sorry, go back here.
Well, just that I also have seen a seismic shift in my lifetime as far as evangelicals looking at the environment. And here at this school, we have the scientific enterprise class for non-majors where we emphasize creation here. So, and many of the other Christian liberal arts schools, and how we need to get that message to the general populace. But there's less of a reaction against the modernism of the early 1900s in evangelical churches now, so they can see it a little more balanced.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to make us stop there because so many people need to leave. It is time for lunch, but if you want to come down and ask that. Yeah.